I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian. Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Katie Lambert.
And I'm Sarah Dowdy. And people have long been fascinated by the sultans of the Ottoman Empire, by this enormous power they wielded across continents and across the centuries, by their extravagant wealth and elaborate building projects, and by their fratricide. They're pretty well known for that.
Yeah, this is one of those, which one of these things does not fit?
And of course, by their dramatic ascendancy and their equally dramatic decline. But come on, sultans of the Ottoman Empire are probably best known for their harems.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely.
We put it in the title. We thought that you might listen to it because it had harem in the title.
Oh, we're so tricky.
We know what you like. So people have this very romantic idea about what a harem is. It's mazes of concubines and slaves, and they're all guarded by eunuchs. So many women, so many kids. It seems just like the most mysterious, most Eastern Ottoman thing you can imagine.
The easiest to fetishize part, yes. But if you romanticize harem life too much, it's easy to forget that harems were simply living quarters, schools, hospitals. They were filled not just with the sultan's concubines, but with his female relatives, his children, and they're all presided over by his own mother.
It's a little city, and it's the sultan's entire domestic sphere. It's not just baths.
Little room of people and sexy gauzy pants.
Yeah, it's not just sexy room time. It's the sultan's house.
That's my new favorite phrase for the day. There could be hundreds or thousands of people in the harem, and some of them, unsurprisingly, had a lot of influence in affairs of state. The chief black or white eunuch, the fortunates who slept with the sultan, the valid sultan, his mother, who was often just as important as the grand vizier and considerably more trustworthy.
Yeah.
But in the mid-16th century, the influence of the harem grew. A series of harem women, concubines, sisters, aunts, and mothers, exerted a tremendous amount of influence on a series of sultans, leading some historians to call this 150-year stretch the reign of women.
Yeah, and this is a very popular listener suggestion, along with harems and along with a lot of these specific women who reigned, quote, during this period. But today we're going to talk about the woman who's said to have started this whole era. She was a captured slave best known as Roxolana.
Roxolana is the ultimate rags-to-riches story, and her Polish countrymen loved her for it. The Ottomans hated her for it. But here are her beginnings, complete with their very obscure
very
origins.
Obscure.
So the girl was possibly named Aleksandra or Anastasia Lisowska, who was born around 1504 near Lvov in the western Ukraine, which was Poland at the time. She was possibly the daughter of an Orthodox priest and an unknown woman. And because the Tartars were pretty much constantly raiding Poland at this time, this little girl with her reddish blonde hair was snatched up and sold into slavery.
Yeah. And somehow she made it all the way to Constantinople, where she ended up in the harem of the Sultan, or possibly the soon-to-be Sultan, Suleiman. She was about 15 years old. And we should talk a little bit about Suleiman. He's
magnificent.
He is. Oh, that's his nickname, Suleiman the Magnificent. He came to power in 1520, and he's known for greatly expanding the Ottoman Empire. He nearly captured Vienna, so that gives you a pretty good idea of how far this guy's power stretched. And he's an interesting guy, too. He's intelligent. He's kind. He seems very gentle, yet he also has a brutal reputation as well.
He loved poetry. His pen name was Muhibi. He put through a lot of legal reforms. He tried to simplify the law. He tried to end discrimination against Christian subjects and lightened up sentences on criminals. But he also had plenty of prisoners executed and killed lots of family members, lots even for Sultan standards, which
are very,
may not be the same as yours
very
and mine.
Low. Yeah, and he started the tradition of saying nothing when foreign ambassadors presented themselves, which, oh boy, I don't think I could be a foreign ambassador. That would be hard to deal with, I'd
say. I can
say.
See Jack Donaghy.
Yeah.
Trying to pull that.
The modern Sultan. So, here's what the Venetian envoy says of Suleiman. He's, quote, by nature melancholy, much addicted to women, liberal, proud, hasty, and yet sometimes very gentle. So, going into this podcast with that description of the man.
If you're going to give him a present, what might you bring him? Perhaps our sweet redheaded Roxolana, she might make a lovely gift. And she did indeed. And even though she would have entered the harem in its lowest ranks, there was a really strict hierarchy in the harem, if you want to talk a little more about that.
Yeah, as we mentioned earlier, the Sultan's mother would be the reigning woman of the harem.
Sabahi.
And then she'd be followed by the mother of his eldest son. And she would be followed by his other sexual partners, followed by women who he may later choose as sexual
partners. Who might
partners,
make the list.
And then just other ladies, too. So she would have come into this whole scheme in the very bottom.
But she may have become a favorite of the Sultan's mother for her intelligence and her humor. So she managed to rise in the ranks a little bit more quickly than some. And she would have lived in a dorm of sorts and learned Persian, Arabic, Turkish, poetry, calligraphy, sewing, dancing, singing, music, storytelling. It's not, again, just sitting around and waiting to enjoy the Sultan's favor. They were doing things with their free time.
And they were chosen a lot of times for their intelligence and for their charm.
Yeah, your ability to make conversation and, you know, be amusing.
Exactly. And actually, according to Venetian reports, Roxolana isn't even particularly beautiful. She's elegant, but she's smart and she's fun and she's nice to talk to.
She must also have caught the Sultan's eye pretty quickly, because by 1521, she had her first son by him, Mehmed. And she also had a new name of her own, Hurrem, or Joyful One.
Which she took upon converting to Islam. And it sounds like a happy family. She has this name meaning Joyful One. She has her son by the Sultan. Maybe sort of distancing herself from that obviously traumatic capture and time in slavery. It's not really the most happy family.
No, don't be fooled.
So we're going to digress for a minute and talk about Ottoman fratricide, which we mentioned in the beginning. It's an unfortunate consequence of harem life, and it's the reverse problem of a lot of the European dynasties, where they don't have an heir. They're too inbred.
Here we have far too
way
many.
Way too many sons. And so when a lot of sultans came to power, the first thing they did was have all of their half-brothers and nephews strangled. You didn't want to spill the royal blood, so you'd have them strangled by like a silk cord or something.
An elegant way of strangling.
It's elegant, but you're still being strangled, which is probably not a very elegant death. They did this because they didn't want competing claims to the throne. We know what happens when you have a lot of men who are all trying to claim their stake. You end up with war. This was a way to try to avoid that.
Harem women weren't even allowed to have two sons by the sultan, so the idea was one concubine mother, one son, and then you better hope you had some girls. So consequently, harem mothers were very invested in their sons, and case in point, Mehmed is not Suleiman's oldest son. A kid named Mustafa is, and Sarah and I are holding back every urge to go all Lion King and say Mustafa through the rest of this podcast.
That'll be the only time.
That's the only time, and I got to do it. Sorry, Sarah. And his mother, the former favorite Gula Bahar, is not pleased with this upstart, Roxolana. So she attacks Roxolana. She scratches her face and, you know, attempts to scar and disfigure her, and she calls her sold meat.
And so when Suleiman summons Roxolana, she refuses him, which is a very bold thing to do. She could have been cast aside or punished for it, but she says that she's too disfigured to appear before him, and she pulls off that quote again. She's sold meat.
She can't come.
He makes her come anyway, and then he asks Gula Bahar if it's true that she attacked Roxolana, and she says, yes, it is true, and she deserved it. It backfires big time on Gula Bahar because it's not long before Mustafa is sent off to act as a governor in a faraway province, and following the tradition of accompanying your son, Gula Bahar is packing her bags to follow him. So she's not in the capital anymore. She's not with the sultan. She's away from where everything is going down.
And Roxolana becomes the apple of the sultan's eye. They have a daughter together, Mirima, who he adores, and three more sons, Salim, Bayazit, and Jehangir, who has a hunchback. So this big family's a big deal. He's letting her break that one mother, one son rule, which people don't like. That's a little scary as far as the power balance goes.
Definitely. People really don't like it. She's getting way too much power, it seems, and has way too big of a hold over the sultan. But then things get even more outrageous because Suleiman becomes nearly monogamous, which is outrageous.
Horrors. Say it ain't so.
He starts marrying off his slaves, marrying off his concubines, which is something you could, I didn't always realize that that was the case, that the harem life, if you didn't have a son by the sultan, you could make a pretty good marriage deal after.
Around 1530, Suleiman marries Roxolana, and Sir George Young of England reported that there was a grand celebration. Houses strung with garlands, there were tournaments, there were feasts, giraffes on parade. No Ottoman sultan had been married for more than 2 centuries. The rest preferred to keep slaves and concubines. So you can imagine how big of an affair this was.
Yeah, you have to imagine, too, it's probably a begrudging celebration on some people's part. But it's clear how much Suleiman is in love with his wife. In one poem, he describes Roxolana as my sheer delight, my revelry, my feast, my torch, my sunshine, my sun in heaven, my orange, my pomegranate, the flaming candle that lights up my pavilion.
Oh, when's the last time you got compared to a citrus fruit?
Or a pomegranate. I mean, that's probably the best part.
But Roxolana wasn't just a lovely pomegranate to Suleiman.
So much more.
She became his most trusted advisor, and after his mother died in 1534, the top woman in the empire.
And she works really hard to master her Turkish so that she can communicate with the sultan while he's away on his campaign. You know, she works to make herself extremely valuable and stay in the loop. They write these love letters to each other while he's away, and they're filled with lots of tender sentiments, but also a lot of news about what's going on. She's clearly his eyes in the capital.
And she keeps spies to inform her about what's going on, about any plots against the sultan, and to just keep her in the loop about foreign affairs as well.
Yeah, so she can be the one who delivers the news.
Exactly.
There's this coup against you.
And she carefully guards who her husband gets close to, because, of course, those are possible rivals. She exposes the forgery of the Sultan's best friend and Grand Vizier Ibrahim, and the Sultan has him executed. And she also acts as a chief diplomatic liaison to Europe. She's believed to be at least partly responsible for the empire's relations with Poland, which for a time turned friendly. There were truces in 1525 and 1528, and eternal peace treaties in 1533 and 1553.
You need to have two of them.
If they're so eternal, yeah, you probably don't. She corresponded with the Polish kings, and it's possible that she had some interest in slowing the slave trade in her country, although we can't say that for sure.
Yeah, according to Muslim World, between the 15th century and the first half of the 17th century, 2.5 million Ukrainians were kidnapped and sold into slavery. And the Tartars apparently treated their captives very poorly, which I feel like that's something we should emphasize too. This slave trade in the Ottoman Empire is huge. So it's not a nice side of things.
Well, and most of them are not this, oh, little girls snatched up and sold into the harem stories. I mean, sound that way just for the story's sake, but yeah, that's not quite how it worked out.
So yeah, she clearly would have had an interest in at least stopping that in her own homeland.
And she even relocates. When fire destroys the harem in the old palace, Roxolana moves into the Sultan's house, Topkapi, right behind the throne room. And when he wants to build her a new palace,
Return to the old way.
Yeah, you know, she deflects him. I'll just stay here. Why don't we build a mosque instead?
So she is literally at the center of power now. She's played her cards well. Unsurprisingly, a lot of Ottomans are suspicious and jealous of Roxolana and this enormous control she exerts over the Sultan. And especially so when her sons begin to come of age and they're sent off to govern provinces, as they traditionally do, and she doesn't go with one of them. So normally, as we mentioned earlier with Mustafa,
Gulabahar, yeah.
Yeah, mothers would accompany their sons, and they would only return to the capital if their son became sultan, and they were returning in the capacity of mother of the sultan. And this was just sort of a old and convenient way to separate power between women. So you had the sultan's sexual favorite back in the capital, and then you had the mother of his heir, and she's off somewhere else.
But as the Sultan's wife, Roxolana stays, living with Suleiman and their son Jihangir in Topkapi. And she wants to stay close to the Sultan for a reason.
Very important reason.
Yeah. Roxolana knew that whatever her place was with Suleiman, if his eldest son was allowed to succeed, her sons would be killed. And Mustafa wasn't only just the eldest son. He was a proper Sultan. He was handsome. He was popular with the army. He was popular with the people. You know, it seemed like something that would stick.
He seemed like a sure bet.
He did.
It seemed like he would definitely be Sultan, making her sons tough luck for them. So she sticks by Suleiman in the capital, and she makes sure that he hears about every single plot and every possible coup. And she also has an ally in the Grand Vizier who happens to conveniently be her daughter's husband, was also a breach of tradition. The Sultan wasn't supposed to have a Grand Vizier who is related to him. It's obviously a conflict of interest. So eventually, with these two sort of planning ideas, and of course their daughter and other allies, eventually the Sultan starts to worry about his son Mustafa's intentions. You sort of hint, hint, what is this guy up to out in the provinces? And eventually he has his own son assassinated. So Mustafa is out of the way. People were very, very unhappy about this assassination.
They accused Roxolana of being a witch and saying she charmed the Sultan with potions. But Selim is the heir now, so she's pretty happy.
Yeah.
Roxolana died in 1558, and Suleiman buried her in his new mosque and ordered another built in her name, plus a school and a hospital. And his final years were appropriately dramatic. Sons Selim and Bayezid fought over succession. The Sultan had Bayezid killed for his intrigues with the Shah of Persia.
He should have learned from his elder half-brother.
He should have, but he didn't. His daughter, Mirima, replaced her mother as Suleiman's most trusted advisor, a position she kept when her brother Selim became sultan. He's sometimes known as Selim the Sot because of his fondness for drink.
Well, and that's another important note to make. Sultans were so concerned about what their sons had going on, you know, if they were seriously planning a coup or some sort of plot, that they would try to give them as much alcohol as possible, as many drugs as possible, as many women as possible, and just sort of turn them into guys who aren't particularly threatening. Of course, that doesn't always breed the best ruler. And so we end up with this period in history where the women of the harem end up exerting more control than they normally would have.
Mirima was instrumental in the decision to seize Malta, and she was influential through many reigns. Her nephew, Murad III, had her buried with Suleiman, and she was followed by other powerful harem women like Saa, Norbanu, Safiye, Qosim. But before we leave Roxolana completely behind, we'd like to talk a little bit about her reputation through the centuries.
Yeah, and I found it kind of strange to research and to talk about someone who is so clearly so influential in her immediate history and after, all over Europe and Asia. But she left behind so little information because, after all, she lived in a harem. The whole point of a harem is to keep it private and separate from public life. And reports of harem life are famously skewed. Ambassadors didn't always know what they were reporting and sort of would spin things however they saw fit.
So what we do have is her correspondence with Suleiman, salary records, Suleiman's diaries and love letters, and Roxolana's letters to Sigismund II. And they paint a picture of a couple very much invested in each other and a capable, ruthless consort to match a capable, ruthless ruler, as Sarah put it to me earlier.
Yeah, but a lot of these documents weren't known until the 19th or 20th century. And by that point, Roxolana had already gotten herself quite a reputation as this manipulator, maybe a witch, you never know. English historian Richard Knollys called her the greatest empress of the East, which sounds like a compliment, but he also portrayed her as this really wicked woman who controlled the good sultan entirely. Eastern European histories go a little more towards the Cinderella route because, after all, this is their countrywoman. She's a slave who rises to great power. But I mean, I think that you can have a little bit of both. I mean, it seems like she did exert quite amount of good, but you'd have to be ruthless. She was working within the harem structure, which is based around ruthlessness, essentially.
Well, and for her survival, for her family's survival, she was, of course, a slave to begin with, and she died the wife of a sultan, the first sultan's wife in 200 years. So we say well played, Roxolana.
I think so.
And if you have a different opinion, feel free to email us at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. We also have a Facebook fan page and a Twitter feed, Missed in History. And if you'd like to look for some more great history articles, check out our homepage at www.howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the Stuff You Missed in History Class blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season show us big risk can yield big rewards. Like Rob Reilly, the creative head of one of the world's leading advertising firms.
I try to create environments where anybody can say anything without any judgment.
Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.